The following is a presentation of the Town of North Hempstead's Project Independence and WCWP. Welcome to Project Independence and You.
Welcome to Senior Talk Radio here at 88.1 FM, WCWP.org. This is Project Independence. You know, I'm your host, John Ryan. My co-host today is Otto Lohse.
Good morning, John.
How are you, Otto?
Good.
And we have two guests. We have Patrick Young and Nancy Baldwin. Nancy Baldwin is a past president of the Unitarian Congregation at Shelter Rock. And Patrick Young is an attorney with Saracen, right?
Caraison,
excuse me. Before we get to these guys, I just want to give you, as I always try to do, the importance of Project Independence. And Project Independence is the Town of North Hempstead Aging in Place Initiative. Under the leadership of Judy Bosworth and Commissioner Kimberly Galante, Project Independence provides programs and services designed to assist and support the older town residents who want to stay at home. It's a very, very important and integral part of the town. The services include transportation for food and for doctor visits, help at home with minor repairs, nursing, social work services, pretty much anything you can think of as a senior that will help you stay at home, the town tries to provide. Now we're going to move over to both Nancy and Patrick, and start our program in reference to immigration. Hello, Nancy. How are you, first of all?
Well, I'm very well. Thank you very much. What a pleasure to be here.
Oh, good. The Unitarian Church, of which Nancy is the past president, last year gave $400,000 out, $100,000 to four different organizations for immigrant reform. Nancy, you'll tell
us. Right. Well, in this case, Unitarian Universal Church on Shelter Rock, part of our social justice and community outreach is really to issue under our large grants program to those initiative that is worthy of our principle in accordance with our principle. So on Long Island, actually, we have given money to the virtual senior center, as part of the independent living, sort of. And
right.
The other one, of course, is giving money to the immigration issue, because I'm sure that most of you may be aware that Long Island, we have probably the most undocumented immigrants on Long Island that need help. So the $100,000 our congregation have voted to provide to several legal entity to help these people to look at the immigration papers and to be sure that they defended before they were deported. So that was a very worthy cause. And
Absolutely.
I think that, it is our intent to continue to provide assistance with partnership with our congregations on Long Island.
Okay. And Patrick, could you just start off with Central American Refugee Center?
That's right.
Which is the long.
That's the long version of Caraison.
What are you guys doing with the money?
Sure. We were very grateful to the Unitarians for the great support that they gave, not just to Caraison, but also to projects at Toro Law School, at Hofstra
right.
Law School, and also at Catholic Charities. All four organizations have been working very closely with the newly arrived refugee children. Everybody heard about these kids last year, and of course one of the questions I get asked is, are they still here? What's going on with them? And essentially what's going on is Caraison and the other four groups are providing direct legal representation to them in the immigration courts. What a lot of people don't understand is that, I guess the image of these kids is that they're 17, 18 years old. We have children as young as 3 and 4 years old who are coming in to us and who are being helped by the Unitarian funding that they provided.
Why are they leaving? And how did they leave? Like you said, a 3-year-old. So now how is a 3-year-old coming here?
Well, the first is why they're leaving. El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras have 3 of the 5 highest homicide rates in the world. All three countries were devastated by wars in the 1980s and 1990s that really essentially destroyed civil societies in those countries. And that's why we have, right now, Long Island's the 5th largest Central American community in the United States. But during the last 5 years, as the U.S.'s project in Colombia essentially has pushed the drug lords onto the defensive in that country, they've moved their operations into this failed states in El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, and they've enlisted what used to be street gangs into this drug trafficking. And as you have the street gangs come into this multinational drug industry, they need to recruit more people. So the kids that we're seeing are essentially the kids who said no. They said, we're going to resist being incorporated into this. And when they do resist, they're often killed. They may be kidnapped, beaten up. We've had girls who were taken out and gang raped. But we also see that not only are the 15, 16-year-olds who are trying to be recruited in danger, but their younger brothers and sisters. Because you can be very brave and resist being incorporated into the gang, but when they say, we're going to rape your 11-year-old sister, it's much harder to resist being in the gang. So that's really why they came. And, you know, why last year? Well, El Salvador last year, the homicide rate, which had been the fifth highest in the world, went up by 58%.
Wow,
so in other
amazing.
Words, you had a country... You have a country that's smaller than New York City that had 10,000 homicides last year. New York City last year had several hundred homicides.
So they're leaving a miserable atmosphere and a potential for future as far as their life is concerned. But when they get here, as I see it, the streets are not paved with gold either. You know, they're coming into a very cold atmosphere. They don't know anything. They don't know the language. I would just can't imagine what it would be like to be one of them at this point in time. You know, where do they go? Who do they know?
Well, you know, one of the myths is that they're unaccompanied children. In other words, they're coming here just magically showing up on Long Island. Their families live here. You know, just as my kids lived with me, these are children who are coming to be either with a parent, an older brother or sister, or a part of an extended family. I mean, I grew up in an Italian neighborhood in Westbury, and, you know, we very often saw that, you know, somebody arrived in the United States. It might be a cousin, it might be a nephew. They went to stay with somebody from that family that was already here, and that's what we're seeing. But you're right, they endure tremendous difficulties in coming here. Some of the girls get sex trafficked along the way. We have parents who call up whose children have disappeared along the way. And when they did arrive in the United States, they were supposed to be treated as children, but essentially they were treated as criminals, and they were put into detention in something that looks a lot like your waiting room out there, where they would sit for 3 to 4 weeks on plastic chairs without any real opportunity to even exercise or to get any education. So now they're here on Long Island, and their primary source of support is obviously their families. But they're also involved in a very complicated legal situation, you know, because the government is trying to sort out which of these kids are going to be deported and which of these kids may qualify for some type of immigration status here in the U.S.
When you say the government, who, like, basically, who is that? Is there people?
It's the federal government. It's the Department of Homeland Security. But the situation is so complex that a single case might go into the immigration court, might then go to the Department of Homeland Security, and then it might go to family court out here on Long Island. So it's very difficult not only for the child but also for the attorneys. There's a lot of attorneys who want to volunteer with us, largely located in New York City, and those attorneys, you know, they're frankly in Midtown Manhattan, and they can't get out to Hapag, or they can't get out to Westbury to the family courts.
If I may, you know, I mean, that's a great question, I think, that you ask. In addition to the legal system, you know, I myself was an immigrant. I came to this country when I was 14 years old. It wasn't in a situation as what we're describing here, but definitely I came from Asia. So I think in addition to the system, a legal system that, you know, is proactive and be able to help, but I think our social structure itself, you know, the reason why I was able to come out of that poverty, because when, like Patrick was saying, you have have a tendency of staying with your extended family, staying in your community. And most often, your extended family, your community may not have the capacity or understanding of the American, not just the legal system, but the social system, the structure, to be able to get out, to find a job, and to connect with the rest of the society. So I think the other piece that is really important to follow up is really that social services, in addition to the legal aspect of it, to be able to help them to integrate into the larger scale of our society, especially in Long Island. And I think that that is a piece that, you know, all of us should really be looking at, is how do we go about helping these children to better integrate into the normal life. And while the legal struggle continues, and I do have to say that if there's a will, you can make it, because I was very, very poor and I did not know awful lot. I did not speak English, but yet, you know, I'm able to make
right,
it
absolutely.
As a pretty successful person, you know, working in a corporate America, being the senior leader of a big company. And it's all that. And so it's really both sides. It's one is provide the infrastructure and a structure for them to do that, and then help these children to build self-confidence that indeed their lives matters, and they can also go and do something for themselves with the hope that you talked about.
I can relate to that also. My parents came from Germany in around 1928. And during World War II, I always felt, I know my father and mother, they didn't speak English either when they got here. And the social part of it, you always felt a hair behind the kids who weren't first generation, if you will, because you really didn't totally assimilate, because your parents really didn't know the system. They couldn't really go to the school and talk for you and whatever. So it becomes a very complicated thing. Unfortunately, there's I was called a Nazi during World War II at the age of six.
Oh my.
And I remember it to this day. And I remember chasing a kid around the block. And I'm not a fighter, but I was going to fight
guy.
That day. Right? And I remember chasing this kid around the block to this day. And unfortunately, that's a hate that is generated falsely, in my opinion. And what causes that, I think, is a very important part of this whole immigration reform, is the mentality and the social feeling that people have for other people. You know, they're just trying to get better. I mean, they don't, you know, people who come in from what you just described, that's a terrible situation. So wouldn't you want to be able to, if it were the other way around, you would want to be able to do the same thing. So it's really...
Well, what you're saying is nice. People should look at it. What if I was in those shoes? Would I want to be helped? Would I want to be a seven-year-old that's being abused, being taken advantage of? And the more negativity you put into a child, the harder it is for them to grow out of it. Everybody can, but, you know, you do some pretty serious damage between 3 and 10 to somebody that it changes their life forever.
Absolutely.
You know?
That's right. I mean, you know, many of us can look back on our childhood and we can remember somebody called us four eyes or
right,
fatso
right.
or said you have small breasts or whatever the hell they said. And let's face it, that often sticks with you for months and months and even years. Well, you have children who come here and they're told they don't belong.
Right, right.
And we're very worried about the impact that it'll have on them. One of the first things they do when they come to Grayson is a Unitarian church out in Brooklyn. Put together packages that include a coloring book, crayons, stickers, etc. We give them that the minute they come in, because we want to remind them and remind all our staff they're not cases, they're not immigrants, they're little kids.
Wow, that's important.
We are
not a number, there's a name.
We're actually doing that. You know, we're still doing that, putting that little backpack together with the dictionaries and with all the crayons and stuff like that. And we're right in the middle of that drive, and we actually are going to be giving them out, yes.
Yeah, no, it's an important thing. It's just, you know, you're making them a person, which is the hardest thing. When you don't speak a language, you're lost in the first place. And then, what is it, body language can really determine how I think about you. Just, you know, you're thrown in the corner, the guy hates me. You walk over with a coloring book, There's a smile on their face. Actually, we have to take our first break. You're listening to Project Independence on You on 88.1 FM, WCWP. We're here with Nancy and Patrick talking about some of the immigration issues facing Long Island.